For the next case, Watkins v. Casper,
083105.
May it please the Court. There's two considerations I'd like to throw out to begin this argument that I think weigh in favor of Dr. Casper's position in this case. First, public employers, like private employers, should be able to take disciplinary action, even fire an employee, when the employee speaks to his supervisor or his employer about matters relating to his job, so that the employer may maintain control over the workplace and have an opportunity to accomplish the mission that the employer has. Secondly, and this is sort of a matter of fairness, prisoners should not have greater First Amendment rights than public employees. In this case, Mr. Watkins, we know, was a volunteer, paid law clerk, voluntary in the sense that he wasn't forced to work in the law library, paid, working at the Miami Correctional Facility. One of his bosses, one of his supervisors, was Dr. Casper, a librarian. In early 2004, there were some directives, instructions, orders given to the law clerks about how certain things were going to be done. The facility was getting ready for an inspection by the American Correctional Association. They wanted to put their best foot forward, of course, and they wanted to make sure that library was in shape and doing proper things. So they asked the law clerks to remove a lot of property, personal property that they had from that library. And Dr. Casper knows that at least on three occasions, Mr. Watkins was made aware of that directive order, and the property wasn't moved. Secondly, they put out a directive relating to how the clerks should assist other offenders. And they essentially said, your role is primarily to provide forms, to get information for inmates, provide forms, not to fill the forms out, not to act as a lawyer in the matter.
I'm just curious, what was the rationale for that? Is there anything in the record for that? Was that also done in anticipation of the inspection?
The record doesn't really tell us that it was, but I presume that I'm only speculating that, of course, they were concerned about putting their best foot forward, or at least making sure that the clerks were doing the kind of job that they wanted them to be doing in the library. And if you're preparing materials, doing those kind of things for someone else, you're acting more in the role sort of as a lawyer. You're also spending a lot of time that you might be devoting to other people, because there are many offenders, of course, that are going to be coming through the library, and they all need some sort of assistance. And if you're focusing on one person, you're ignoring others. So there's a lot of legitimate reasons for having the clerks focus on what the mission that the institution wants them to focus on.
Of course, that had been the mission before before Dr. Casper came in.
The mission,
because there were people there who couldn't read or couldn't write, and so part of the function of the law clerks was to assist them. I just wondered what was in the record as to...
The record really doesn't say one way or another about why that was put out, but it was put out. We contend that Mr. Watkins was not the victim of retaliation, certainly not in violation of the First Amendment. This court held in its McElroy case in 2005 that claims of prisoners under the First Amendment should be analyzed essentially under the same standards applicable to speech by non-prisoner government employees. And then we had, after that, the Garcetti case.
Now, you're defending here on two grounds, am I right? Is speech in front of the group saying disagreeing with the policy. And secondly, the retaliation claim, the fact that when he spoke out about his personal property, he was he claims to have been.
Right. There are two separate things, and the analysis is a little different under both.
Could I ask, sir, then, with respect to the first, as I understand it, you'd like to see us adopt the Garcetti test. And as I read your brief, the thing that came to my mind was, why do you want the Garcetti test?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why isn't Turner just as good for you as Garcetti?
Well, or better, really.
Or better, yeah.
Well, we talked about Turner, actually, when I was getting prepared for this argument, and we certainly think that Turner really isn't inconsistent with Garcetti. Turner goes towards, you know, reasonable actions and those kinds of things. I think Turner was maybe a little more focused on the appropriateness of the actual regulation and that kind of thing. This case is focused more on what, just that there was a speech given. There was comments by this particular law clerk to the supervisor.
That's your key point, isn't it? In other words, he got up in front of a group and he took a position, not simply on his behalf, but on behalf of other people. He acted as an advocate for other prisoners. That creates a danger to good order and discipline, in your view.
Well, it in terms of getting the job done, in terms of the employment context, that's what, you know, I'm liking to focus on here.
But isn't the managerial discretion of a prison administrator even greater than that of a prison employer in terms of making sure there isn't dissension, making sure if there is speech, it's done only as they allow it and so forth? They have a lot of control over prisoners' lives.
Well, I agree that there is a lot of discretion given. But on the other hand, we have cases where if a person, a prisoner, files an affidavit in court, as in the Bridges case, and makes statements in there that implicate constitutional rights, it might be a matter of public interest, then there are questions raised that, you know, might be difficult for administrators to answer with respect to the actions they take against that person subsequent to that affidavit being filed. That can be a pretty tough case, even though there's considerable discretion given.
This job is really just part of his prison regimen, isn't it? I mean, it's one of the things that prisoners, if they behave themselves, get to do, helps them pass the time, earn some money, take on some responsibility. It's part of the institution's rehabilitative effort, isn't it?
It's that, but it's more than that. There's also jobs to be done. We have inmates to be assisted in the law library.
Or not assisted, of course.
Or not assisted. That we have people that are working as plumbers and cooks and all kind of jobs that have to be done on a daily basis. They need to be done just like any other job, in a way that the employer can expect it to be done, so that the expectations of the employer are carried out.
I hate to cut into your rebuttal time, but the way this jury was instructed was that they were to consider statements made by the defendant or by the plaintiff, and whether he was retaliated for those statements in the plural. And so, how can we tell from this general verdict which statements the jury was finding that he had made and that he was retaliated against?
Well, I think I've talked about it in the brief, and I do want to reserve some time for a rebuttal, but I talked about it in the brief in terms of when things happened. We know that...
Basically, you've got the 13th February
and the
26th.
And 26th.
Right.
That's right. And the timing is so important. And the 26th is all about his personal concerns about his property. The 13th is about what happened then, and the fact he didn't move his property. So I think...
And the 26th, he wasn't really employed anymore, was he?
Wasn't employed. So
Garcetti wouldn't work there.
That's not a Garcetti situation.
Bridges says we're not looking at a matter of public interest.
Mm-hmm.
It's whether it's a legitimate penological interest. So, and you didn't make that argument at the trial court. You don't make it here.
But so. It was certainly a legitimate penological interest in the second instance. When someone gets in your face and screams at you, just filing a conduct report about it is not, retaliation. It would have happened.
There can be retaliation, though, even in a legitimate conduct report.
There can be, but there wasn't here when we look at the facts.
But didn't the jury?
Well, go ahead.
Thank you. Did the prisoner file any kind of a grievance about the loss of his personal property other than this encounter with the librarian?
There was nothing put into the record of a grievance, a written grievance.
So there's a real question as to whether he filed a grievance.
There was a question whether he filed a grievance.
Yelling at a librarian is not filing a grievance.
We don't think so. I would like to reserve just a bit of time.
Let me ask you. I'll give you a little more time because we've had a lot of questions. If the court chooses to apply Garcetti, do we need to ask whether Watkins was speaking as a citizen, or is it sufficient to determine if he was just speaking on a matter of public concern?
Well, my contention is Garcetti applies to that situation. Because he was a prisoner employee, he should be treated the same as other employees. He was performing a mission. His speech was about his job function. And the employer has the right, or the discretion in that kind of situation, needs to have that right in order to function, to be able to fire the guy if he doesn't look like he's going to, you know, perform the job the way they want him to, and hire somebody else.
All right. You'll still have your 3 minutes of rebuttal. Ms. or Mrs. Harris?
Yes.
Ms. Okay.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'll just jump right to the main point. I think that the record shows that Mr. Watkins was speaking not only about his duties, but also about the impact of the new policy on the entire prison community. So getting right to the Garcetti test issue, I would first like to point out that even if the Garcetti test applies, the order and the jury verdict are still correct. Appellant's statement that the Garcetti test is a test as to whether the statements relate to the job duties is actually incorrect. The court in Garcetti didn't actually explicitly said that statements that concern the subject matter of employment are not necessarily not protected. Instead, the Supreme Court focused on the fact that the actual speech at issue was official speech. In Garcetti, the memorandum that Sabalos submitted to his supervisor was an actual memorandum prepared in his official duty as the district attorney. And in this case, I think it's quite clear that Mr. Watkins' speech was not official speech. Yes, it was made at a meeting, but again, Garcetti says the fact that it's made in the office is not dispositive.
Well, it was in the presence of other law clerks, and he was suggesting or stating that he wasn't going to follow this new directive and sort of creating some disruption among the law clerk employees, wasn't it?
It was during a meeting. It was during a meeting with all the people who had the power to implement the policy. He actually did not state that he would not follow the policy, and the record does not support that. In fact, he was rehired as a law clerk. He criticized the policy, and he's entitled to do so, as even though he is a prisoner employee. In appellant's brief, they do repeatedly say that he forwarded the policy, but that is just not the case. And it's really not why we're here to reweigh the evidence or find facts other than what the jury found. And I would just like to point out that in the Garcetti case, the Supreme Court also said, there's several quotes in there where they really make it clear that it's the fact that that memo was part of the actual job duty, not just the general criticism about a policy in the office that would affect the general public. The court states that, quote, as a prosecutor fulfilling a responsibility to advise a supervisor about how best to proceed with a pending case, that's how Mr. Sabalos spoke, end quote, restricting speech that owes its existence to public employees' professional responsibilities does not infringe any liberties, end quote. And moving on to the issue of whether Bridges should apply to this case. As you stated, prisoners are very in a very different position than public employees. And this does not change just because a prisoner is employed in the prison. And I think that that's clear.
Ms. Harris, I can see where your client had a right to file a grievance for what happened to his property. But he doesn't seem to have done that. Instead, he caused a confrontation with a civilian employee in the prison system. And it's not hard to see why someone in her position thought this was untoward, intimidating, and that she had to draw a line and do something about it. Can you help me with that? It seemed to me if he had sat down and written out a grievance and handed it in on the chain of command as he was supposed to, yeah, he'd be protected. He didn't do that.
And I do understand your concern, but the fact is that prisoners are not limited to grieving through writing. Oral grievances are also protected, and the district court, in her very thorough and well-considered opinion, noted that both the criticisms about the library policy and his complaints about how his property was treated were both oral grievances.
Did he file? With whom would he have filed a written grievance?
I'm actually not sure who he would have filed a written grievance. He did file grievances, but it was after I believe so. I believe.
The record and can't find.
I know that before. I mean, whether or not those were not at issue at what was considered the retaliation, the report that was filed. At that point, he had not filed a written grievance, but he had grieved orally about how his property was treated.
Did Dr. Casper argue at the trial court that the conduct report she wrote up was a matter of legitimate penological interest and as a matter of law was entitled to a verdict because of that?
I do not believe so. I don't believe that there was any direct argument about the legitimate penological interests at any point. They do argue that that grievance report was a proper action, but the jury and the district court found differently. And in fact, if we're talking about intimidation, we should also remember that the report was actually, he was never actually found guilty of intimidation, but instead of a lesser offense of disorderly conduct. And as you pointed out earlier, the fact that there is a proper conduct report does not take away the fact that the prisoner has properly grieved.
Thank you, Ms. Harris. Mr. Steiner.
If we were going to talk about whether this was part of his official speech, that's what we were kind of getting to when we were talking about this as was related to his job duties. I don't know how it could be more official in terms of prisoner employee. We got a small group of people. We got the supervisors of the library. We have the clerks that are working under them. We're talking about a policy relating to how to provide services. There couldn't be something that was more in the, you know, the realm of his official capacity at that point as being this clerk. We never have contended, I don't think in our brief, we never contended that he actually thwarted the policy. We didn't go around following him. He was fired after the speech. The fact is the words mean something. The words he said, I believe you're violating my constitutional right to be able to represent other inmates the way I want to do it, I think is an implication. There was implication enough in that that he might not be trusted to carry out the policy at that point.
You know, I'm actually more troubled with this 26th.
On the 26th incident, I think we did analyze it both at trial and in our brief. We haven't analyzed it directly under Bridges. We haven't analyzed it directly under Turner. But what we do say is, regarding to the extent that this was even something that's considered speech that could relate to a matter of public concern, this verbal confrontation, we say, we look at these cases like McElroy and a lot of other cases. If there was a matter that related to an individual interest more than this, I don't know what it was. It got in Dr. Casper's face because she had, in his view, mishandled his own property.
And restricted his library time. The jury was asked to determine whether these statements he made were the reason for retaliation. And I'm afraid the jury made a finding here.
Well, I don't know that the jury gave us any kind of finding that we really understand.
This jury instruction of what he had to prove was not objected to, as I understand it.
No, I don't believe we objected to any instruction that I'm aware of, because I would have raised it otherwise.
Right.
And you didn't pose a different kind of verdict form, did you?
I don't believe we did. I don't. But I do think it's a matter of law, what's going on here. We're looking at facts. I think you can segregate these two incidents. The alleged retaliation that related to the earlier speech was clearly him losing his job and getting a write-up that essentially accused him of not following the order to get his property out of there when he should have. And that all related to that first incident. The second conduct report was merely about what the employee felt was intimidation. I think that was fairly reasonable for the employee to feel that way. It did not. That's what we were focusing on. That's what occurred after the 26th. That was the new thing that happened. We'd ask you to reverse the judgment of the court and direct that judgment be entered in favor of Dr. Casper. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Steiner. Thank you both, counsel, for fine arguments. We'll take the case under advisement.